Hi, this is Paul Warne, and you're listening to the Rams Review Podcast.
This is the Rams Review Podcast. Discussions, insights, interviews, and analysis. All passion, all Derby County.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Rams Review Podcast. Corey along with you. I apologize for the hiatus for a couple of weeks. Jason's been on the road doing his thing, all about the country, Aylesbury, Coventry, everywhere in between. And I've actually just come back from the UK, so was unable to record for a period of time. I happened to miss all the flooding, Chris, as you're well aware. And right there, I gave away my guest for the evening. It's Chris Smith, reoccurring guest on the podcast now. Chris, how the heck are you?
Yeah, fine. Thanks, Corey. And yeah, my feet are dry and made it to the match and back safely last night. So we're all good and ready to go.
Did you bring out your Rams-colored, Rams-themed canoe?
No. Water, but not a strong point of mine. Swimming and water sports.
So you had like the floaties on your arms.
Yeah. Be woggle and floaties is more my
with
thing.
With your I heart Paul Warren Speedo, right?
Yeah. No, swimming cap.
Okay. Because I had the matching Speedo. You got the swimming cap. That works out. Get all the looks on the beach from everybody. Probably not good to my detriment. But Chris, I want to start with obviously with Derby County, because this is a Derby County related podcast. It'd be odd if we started anywhere else, to be frankly honest. Win against Exeter City last night. Before we get into the game, I want to address a little bit about the manager, Paul Warren. There's been a lot of fury around him recently. We saw the images from the game against Shrewsbury with Conor Hurrahan, and the fans got into a bit of a heated discussion. Derby win last night. Does it take any pressure away from the fact that Paul Warren is under pressure? Does the game convince you that he can handle it at this football club? Does it do anything to kind of sway your opinion? Where do you stand on Paul Warren in, Paul Warren out?
Okay, well, that's a big start, isn't it?
Before people skip the rest of the episode, let's get the big one out of the way.
Yeah, okay. I don't think tonight, sort of, last night was great. So in the context of last night, I think we've been screaming for Derby to knock over what's in front of them. And certainly we've been screaming them for to do that at home. And last night they did it. I think we'll talk about last night's game, I guess, in a bit. But I think in terms of the bigger picture, I don't think that's really changed. I mean, you know, it's kind of taken some air out of the balloons, probably a good thing to say. I mean, you know, without a shadow of a doubt, anything less than a win last night, it would have been borderline terminal, I think. But I think there's a couple of things here that with Warren. I mean, Warren, he's had just over a year, so there's an anniversary there. So there's a natural kind of stake in the ground for people to review where we are. And I think the general consensus is we're probably not much better off. The style of football, I think, is great when you win. And as I said with Jason last time I was on, this style of football is great when you win. When you don't, it's awful. And, so that's the thing. And I just think that some of the stuff over the last few weeks has been so self-inflicted. And, I'm not a fan of berating our own manager and calling out our own players. It's just not a cool thing to do, in my opinion. I could have strangled him at that Cheltenham game. You know, I mean, we played the Blackpool game on the Tuesday night. Awesome performance. We stumbled across a winning formula, I think we all thought. Supermax is back there in number 10 running the show. Corey Smith played the game of his life. Fauna was looking like the player we thought we'd signed, and he changed the team for Cheltenham. Why would you do that? You know, what I've heard and read is Max Bird was coming back from injury. We had to protect him and he couldn't play two games in a week. Fine. Put Hurahan in that role and bring Max on if things are going wrong, or start Max and tell him you're coming off at half time, come what may. So make sure this game's won, you know. So to change the formation out of some weird, misguided respect for Cheltenham, who had not won a game or scored a goal, was wild, in my opinion. And I mean, I was properly fuming after that game. It took me a pretty much a good few days to get over that. I was just so frustrated and upset, and just there was just no need for it. And you know, at that game, they came over and clapped, and there was audible boos. I would say it wasn't the scenes we saw on Saturday, but there was definitely audible boos. And I was thinking, do you know what, you've bought this on yourself at this point, you know. And and I think just what, you know, he's had his interview and he was talking about, well, I just thought in this game, you know, when he said, oh, I don't want the ball down the middle. You know, I don't want the ball down the middle. We want to get it. I've got the two best speed merchants in the league. And I think, you know, what am I listening to? So you just think that. And I think at that point, and as I say, so that coupled with, we then had a kind of a natural break because the Charlton game was cancelled. Obviously, we had a good win at Notts County, which again takes a little bit of air out of the balloon. But, you know, kind of, but then in that break, you know, the world is different now to it used to be. So we're online and we're not just seeing people on Twitter going, I hate Paul, you know, effing and jeffing and cursing Paul One. We're seeing proper people doing analytics and talking about kind of, you know, number of games won, number of shots on target, you know, dissecting the patterns of play, looking at the recruitment in the summer, you know, and there's massive questions around that, regardless of what he says. And, you know, fundamentally, I think it's just that, and that year anniversary as well, it just all was a perfect storm. And then obviously at Shrewsbury, again, we don't show up and we don't put the ball in the net. A scabby goal that they scored, which could have, you know, been a scabby penalty as well. And it was just horrible. And to my mind, you know, he has zero goodwill. Yeah. So I think if you think about like a, you know, I actually put a tweet out. I said, if you put it in Football Manager mode, I think he's gone from kind of, unstable, insecure to like very insecure. And I think the fact we've won one game has probably nudged up again, use a computer game analogy. If you think of an energy bar, I think the red's probably gone up a tiny bit from last night. But, you know, if we get beat on Saturday, that will go straight down to empty again. And, you know, the knives are out. And, I'm struggling to see. It worries me it might be a slow death, because I can see us winning one, losing one, because it's impossible for us to be this bad with the players we've got, although he's doing a good job of it. And but so I fear it's a slow death, but I just think that it takes a lot. He is going to have to literally win 5-6. He's going to get a magic formula and he is going to have to win 4-5-6-7 games in pretty short order to get back on track. Because, you know, when you see something that happened at Shrewsbury, people abuse openly, and not one person, a lot of people openly singing anti-manager songs, and players arguing with fans, and, you know, all right, that's not unwarm, but it's still not a good look. And
the mentality of the group, right, where the group's at.
Yeah, exactly. And I just fear that. I'm not sure what the next few months hold, mate, if I'm perfectly honest.
Yeah, and hopefully you don't get into the Ole Gunnar Solskjaer kind of permutation that he was at Man United, right? He'd like lose a couple of games, like, we're going to sack him. Then he'd win three in a row, and they're like, oh, genius. Then he'd lose two, and he'd be like, he's going. And then he'd win three, and then he's staying. And that went on for like 18 months at Man United. I'm not comparing Manchester United to Derby County currently, but I'm just saying it was kind of that thing where they keep hanging on, right? You win a couple, you lose, and you kind of like, but it's not working.
Corey, in the context of League One, that's not as silly as an analogy as you're joking about it. But in the context of League One, that is not a silly analogy, because, you know, and this is part of the problem, right? So what I think we're seeing is the amount of respect, and the Cheltenham I just spoke about there, that we are giving to teams who quite frankly don't deserve that level of respect is ridiculous. You know, I'm not saying no games are easy. I'm not suggesting that for one minute. I'm not suggesting you don't do your homework and have a plan, but, you know, changing, you know, we're, we need to remember who we are, you know. And you know, and that analogy you've just gave there. So Man United have an expectation in the Premier League to win every single game, right? Because that's who they are over many years. And in League One, and I would argue in the Championship as well. And this is what I think, you know, we have got a manager who has built his success on underdog football. And I would argue with anyone that until the day we get back to the Premier League, we are not underdogs in a league game against anybody. So, you know, you even, and I will qualify that, you know, so if we're playing, let's take, I don't know, Preston, who are a solid, above average Coventry, solid quality, well-run, above average Championship teams. You're going to go to Pride Park against either of them and think we're not going to beat them? Because I'm not. You know,
no, you don't. That's not it. When you think 3 or 4 years ago, Chris, when we were high flying in the Championship, it was like, ah, yeah. Coventry's this week. How many are we going to get? Because that's kind of the mentality. There's very few teams in the Championship. You know, Leicester's an anomaly. There's teams that are there that are Premier League teams in waiting, right? That have come down that are just miles better that you get that impression with sometimes, right? Like when Burnley got 120 points last year. Yeah, they're different gravy at this level. But you're right. 90% of the teams in the Championship and probably every team in League One, bar maybe one or two, maybe Bolton and Portsmouth, you know, you might think these are going to be kind of tough games because they're good teams. They're well run. They're big for the division. You know, that might be a bit tough. But then every other team you're kind of looking at. I mean, Chris, you were at the Cheltenham game. And oddly enough, I was at the Cheltenham game in person. So since the first time since we've met, we were at the same location at the same place at the same time. And I was watching Derby warm up. And the Cheltenham fans were sitting there going, Christ, you don't get this is Derby County. Like, this is amazing. You don't get this close to the players. Like, this is, you don't get this close at Pride Park. And they were just in, like, I wouldn't say they were in awe, but it was like, this is Derby County. And you sit back and you're like, it is kind of cool. We are kind of the big boys in this division. We should be kind of doing this. And, you know, that was the frustrating thing for Cheltenham is that, you know, we have these quality players. We have, and this quality players, and then I'm going to preface into my other question, you know, we have players like James Collins, who scored at this level before, Barkhausen and Mendez Lang. We have, you know, Martin Waghorn. We have, you know, Connor Hurahay, Max Bird. We have all these quality players. So, Chris, my point is that on paper, they're quality. Is it a managerial problem or are the players just not as good as what we think they are? Or is it a bit of both?
I think it's a bit of both, but it's the patterns of play that, I mean, I've got, I'll be fair. You know, again, when I saw the fans arguing, there was, you know, somebody was having a go about hooraying about lack of effort. I will be honest and say, I can't think of many games I've been to this year where I've not thought the team weren't busting a gut. In fairness.
I don't think that the effort is ever not there for the player.
I don't see people disinterested or thinking they're better than the league or, you know, kind of showboating around for want of a better phrase. And I agree with you, but, you know, the team changes every week, Corey. The tactics change every week. And, yeah, okay, I get we've had injuries, understand that, but maybe don't sign players with horrendous injury records. But that's a different conversation. But,
like Ellie Hamilton, sorry.
Yeah, or Sonny Bradley, or John Jules, or Kane Wilson, or Callum Elder. Anyway, it's got to be a coaching issue because I don't see a pattern of play. And one thing I did think about the other day was at the end of last season, when Darren Moore was having all his kerfuffle with Sheffield Wednesday when he left, I saw loads of Sheffield Wednesday fans online going, well, to be fair, football was awful. And I was thinking, lads, you got 96 points. And how can you say the football was awful? But then I'm now sort of thinking, I think I know what they meant. Yeah, because, you know, last night we won and it was good, but it wasn't amazing. And it was a bit like, I look at the games we play where we have won. And, you know, last night was very much like the Pizza Cup game against Lincoln I went to, where it was sort of all right. And there was patches where you think, not really. But then we just scored two great goals out of nowhere and it was job done. Everyone was like, oh, brilliant. But against Cambridge, where Warne's point again is that, and you can take this either way. This is a half cup full, half cup empty. Because against Cambridge, he said, well, we played really well. We just didn't finish our chances. Which, if we'd have won that, scored, so Waggy scores his header in that game, then maybe that's the same as last night. You know, so, but I don't know. But in all the games, they just struggle, aren't they?
Yeah, they are, especially in the final third, Chris. I mean, you look at the game against Notts County, and obviously it's not a league game, but it's a game that I attended and I enjoyed massively. And Derby could have had three or four, you know, goals in the first half and made the game very, very easy. that's not to say that Notts County didn't play well. Mm. I thought they played pretty well, to be honest, for where they were at and having had a change team. Yeah. County get the penalty, and Derby maybe a little bit up against it for the last 10 minutes. Not massively, but it gives them a sniff. And I think you're right. I think if you're winning football games, the style of play doesn't really matter because, honestly, I like Derby to win games more than anything. I love it. Exactly. I love it when my team's top of the league. I'd love it to get 96 points. I love just winning games. That's what football is all about at the end of the day.
Yep. But absolutely.
The second part to that is it is a entertainment business, right? So you want to show up and you do also want to be maybe slightly entertained. That maybe that's a leap too far for me. I don't know, but I kind of sometimes like to be entertained. And I think, Chris, this is where it's a little different for me than where it is for you, because you go every week in the stadiums. You see them live most weeks, every week. And I come a couple of times a year to watch a couple of games, so that when I show up to Cheltenham or I show up to Notts County, I'm like, I think it's just the excitement of being there sometimes, of seeing a live football match. It was my first time in like 3 years coming back to watch that live football match. So you get that buzz, right? And you're like, wow, this is amazing. I'm seeing all these players play and I'm working it out and getting readjusted to watching live football, because live football is different than television football. But I think you're right. Looking back, if I had to watch that every week, I think it would probably start to wear on me as well. I mean, Cheltenham got the goal and I'm sitting there thinking, did that really, like, it was one of those, I was here for that moment, right? Like, I talked to a Cheltenham fan. He's like, we thought we would struggle. We just didn't think it'd be this bad. And the talk pre-match from all the Cheltenham fans was, I hope we can get a goal. It wasn't even a win. It wasn't even a draw. They didn't care. They just wanted to see their team score one goal. And they did. And they had a goal of the month contender because he scored one goal. So it made it easy for the sponsors. But yeah, I think if you watch it every week, like you do, Chris, and it's different again on TV as it is vice, the nuances are slightly different as watching it in person. I think I would start to get a little annoyed, especially, you know, at the Cheltenham game. There were players in that Cheltenham team that you were thinking, this guy is having an absolute stinker of a game, or this guy is just not very good. And Derby either play around that player or don't put pressure on that player. And it's like, I don't know how other people can't see that the number 23 for Cheltenham was very poor. He was very slow to turn. He was very slow to pass. And like, he was having a terrible, terrible game. And I thought, I'd put two men on him. I'd press him every single time. So he either doesn't get the ball or he shirks away or he makes a mistake and we're in, you know. And talk about the goal that Derby scored against Cheltenham, Chris. The keeper made like a Gordon Banks-esque save. It was a credible save. He got down and Nelson was just there to put his big head on it. So, I think it's one of those things. And Chris, do you think then it's symptomatic a little bit of we as Derby fans have become accustomed to a certain style of football, you know, under Stephen McLaren, vice, you know, after the end of Nigel Clough, right? Which it was what it was. It was a rebuilding stage in hindsight. Wasn't bad, wasn't great. But then Stevie Mack came in and basically, you know, we played to use a previous owner's analogy, the Derby way, right? We were kind of used to free-flowing attacking football, knocking teams for 3 and 4 goals, trying to play this thing. Do you think it's sometimes the fans look back and think, this isn't what the team was under Frank Lampard. This isn't the way we tried to play football under Steve McLaren. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that hurts. And maybe people need to change the frame of reference and go, we're in League One now. This is everything that's happened in the past is the past. It's different. It's different at this stage. Is that part of it, do you think?
I think, I definitely think it feeds into it, certainly for some of the younger fans. So, you know, certainly at some of the away games and, you know, where the fan base is generally younger and they've been brought up in that Mel Morris era where, you know, although we ultimately failed, we definitely won more than we lost. And generally the football was pretty good. You know, I mean, Rowett obviously was an anomaly in that because he had a different philosophy. But even in that, you had Vidra in that team, so it was good. You know, so there's a little bit of that, I think. But, you know, when Billy Davis got promoted, the football wasn't brilliant. But, you know, it was definitely brilliant when we won 2-1 with injury time goals and won 1-0 and scored late winners and held on and won away at Southampton. You know, it was awesome, you know. So I think there isn't a part of play. I mean, this is one of the other things that I've spoken to my friends about quite a bit. You know, I hear people say, oh, it's hoofball. I don't have that. I'm not having that at all. I don't think it is hoofball. I don't know what it is, but I don't see us like, I mean, if we bought 3 6-foot strikers and we were just right, launch it. Yeah. But we're not doing that, are we? You know,
we don't. We pick the ball up and they give it to the deep line midfielder and then he pings a ball out to to the wings. It's not like we're going straight from defense to attack. We do utilize the midfield, but I would say maybe 60, 70% of that time, that deep line midfielder then sprays a ball out wide.
The only thing I can say is that we have an obsession with, or Warren seems to have an obsession with crossing, which I don't really understand because we don't have what I would call a target man centre forward. You know, even a journeyman. You know, he just seems to have this obsession with getting it wide and crossing, which I just don't understand. But yeah, I mean, I think it's more the fact there isn't really a pattern of playing. But again, if you're winning games, who cares? You know, just you know, it doesn't matter if we
get it in the back of the net, son.
Yeah, if we'd have beat Cambridge, beat Cheltenham, and lost at Shrewsbury, and then won last night, we'd be on here probably fourth in the league, and we'd be going, "Oh, brilliant! You know, this is great. You know, what do you think about Stevenage, and what do you think we need to do for the January window?" And having all those positive kind of conversations, but I think it's the fact that. We, as I said a few minutes ago to you, Corey, I think we just change the team every week, change the formation every week. And I don't know if it's because we haven't found a formula yet, or we're too respectful of the opposition, or even we're just maybe doing a pep and just overthinking it. I don't know. And I think that's the thing. I don't know. I mean, and here's just my final point on this pattern of play thing is, there's a really good article recently about the academy, you know, like they've restructured Derby Academy. And they've got these couple of guys from Southampton, obviously Bucco has a role. And there was a phrase there, I think Matt Hale, who's the new guy, he said something about the new structure. And what we want is a consistent philosophy and pattern of play through the club. And I'm like, well, I'd love to know what that is.
Yeah, and I think that, to be honest with you, Chris, I think that that's something that this football club has been crying out for. I mean, when you look at the different style of managers Derby have had over the past 5 or 6, 7, 8 years, you went from playing sexy football under Steve McLaren to a different style under Rowett, to McLaren coming back, not having the same pieces, adjusting it slightly, to Frank Lampard, to Philip Kaku, then to Wayne Rooney, then to William Rossini, and then to who we have now, Paul Warren. Right. And I think sometimes it's strange because you never have the consistency at Derby to play the same kind of way. Right. So like Brentford, and I'm not saying director of football or general manager or anything like that, but if you look at Brentford, every manager that Brentford's had has built on top of the things. Thomas Frank built on the foundations of what Dean Smith did. He didn't just tear it up and go, we're going to play a completely different way. And I think maybe Derby, you know, if Matt Hale's trying to get that consistent style of play, but the club needs to understand, okay, this is what he's trying to implement. They did this at the England youth level, didn't they? Where they're all going to try to, Gareth, how do you want the English team to play? And he goes, I want him to play this way. Great. We'll try to implement down to 21s, to the 20s, to the 18s, to the 19s, whatever. So that as players come through, they kind of know their similar roles. You can look at a player and go, this 18-year-old's doing well in the same system. Maybe we should call him up for a senior team training to see how he does or something like that. And I think it's going to be, I think that's the next step for Derby in this development as we start to continue the rebuild, is we have to sit there and get managers that continue to build off of each other, that continue to grow, so that the next manager doesn't come in and say, I need to get rid of 8 players because Paul Warren plays a completely different style. I need to sit there and say, okay, Paul did this. I want to eventually get to this. It's going to take a couple of years, but how do we change this to make the Derby ethos? How do we kind of evolve? Not revolution, but evolution. So not every manager that comes in is like, well, we're just going to get rid of these players, get new players in, and then it'll be fine. Because then we're going through the same cycle of churning out people all the time. There needs to be some sort of consistency. And that's what I want to see long term from Derby, is that we have some sort of strategy, some sort of plan to sit there and go, we need to continue to move this on the upswing.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that I've read recently, and again, you know, to be fair, it couldn't have been time worse with the, I mean, there's been so much forensic analysis of the club over the last 2 weeks. But I think one of the things that I've read, and I do kind of agree with online quite regularly, is that I'm not sure how much, I'm talking about that exact stuff, Corey, you're talking about there, you know, like the director of football and the philosophy. I'm just not sure how much football nous, for want of a better phrase, we've got in our exec team. So
yeah, you know, front office.
Yeah exactly. So like, God bless David Clowes, and I'm never ever ever gonna say a bad word about that guy ever, But clearly, he's new to football. Yeah, not disrespect to him in any way, shape, or form. But he's new.
But he's
to football.
The owner. He's not there to make the footballing decision.
No,
right? Like
he's not.
He has some.
But then,
things,
you know.
But
so
I don't expect
only,
him to come in with the.
Well, the only person I see there who's with any football acumen who's not in the football department is Stephen Pearce, and you know I'm not really asking him to get me a pint of milk from the shop. To be fair, so. I don't really know. So I don't know where that bit comes from. And, you know, kind of, as I say, we seem to have recruited Warne on the basis that he's won League One before. Well, you know, I think you need to go a bit further under the bonnet than that. And I can understand why we did it, but I just think that's such a basic thing. You know, nobody looked at the environment. Nobody looked at the style of football. I mean, again, take your point there about continuity. Couldn't feasibly be a more clunky kind of change up to go from Rossignol ball to Warne ball, could it? You know, and we're kind of two windows in on that, and we're not that much better. And to be fair,
the thing that scares me, Chris, is the January window didn't do us any favors last year. So why would I think the January window is going to do us any favors?
What were you saying last?
In terms
yeah,
of
I mean,
improvement. So
yeah, I mean,
look
I mean,
at it trying to bring a difference maker in January. We've proven that last January that did not happen. We actually got worse. So,
well, I mean, people you know. Talking a lot, obviously, about not replacing McGoldrick. But we were saying last night, I don't think we've replaced Dobbin. I don't think we've replaced Asula. If we'd have replaced Asula with anybody, and you know, anybody, just a body in January last year, I'm convinced we'd have got in the playoffs. You know, and I think, let's say, I'm not saying, and I didn't like Asula, by the way, so I wasn't bothered about him going back, but he needed replacing. And I think even with Dobbin,
lanky speedster kind of guy.
Yeah, Dobbin wasn't a world beater, but he was definitely a game changer when he came on. He was something different, you know. And so we've never replaced him, and obviously we've not replaced Didzy. You know, and again, to be fair to Washington, moving on to maybe talking a bit more positive about Saturday's game. You know, maybe he's played his way into contention, because what I saw at Shrewsbury on Saturday and what I saw last night was his movement. And again, you know, form your own view on what you think of him as a player, but he's different. And when he came on, just his pure movement just seemed to pull Shrewsbury and indeed who would we play? Exeter, pulled him around a bit, and then he got gaps and obviously scored a great goal, to be fair to him,
I mean,
as well. So.
We saw earlier this season, Chris, that the Waghorn-Washington kind of combination played dividends for a couple of games. Is that the way we need to go? Because I've seen James Collins, it doesn't necessarily convince me. But, you know, if you have someone who, like you said, who's running in the channels, who's pulling defenders out of position, who has that little bit of pace, that defenders at this level are going to go, this guy's quick. I need to back off a yard. Or if he gets past me, we're done here. And then you've got, you know, Waghorn with his experience. Is that kind of the way forward, do you think, for a few more games?
Yeah, I don't think there's a lot in it, really, between Collins and Waghorn, really. I mean, Collins's work rate is ludicrous, but his finishing is hit and miss. You know, Waggy's got the quality, but, you know, when he's in and out, I think the last few games I've seen him play, he's been in and out of the game. So I don't think there's a lot to call between those two at the moment. But I'd definitely give Washington a run on Saturday, because, as I say, away from home, you know, we're going to be under the cosh. It's going to be pretty direct from Stevenage. You know, they're kind of set-piece merchants, aren't they, as well? And so a lot of defending to be done on Saturday. And, you know, maybe Washington's pace on the break might be a better bet, I think. And Barkhausen, maybe.
And that's a perfect lead-in, Chris, as I talked to Matt earlier this week to find out a little bit more about Stevenage. Now we're going to turn our attention to Derby County's next game, which is against Stevenage. So with me today to talk all things Stevenage is from the aptly named Stevenage FC podcast, is Matt Farrelly. Matt, how the heck are you? Welcome to the Rams Review podcast.
Yeah, look, Corey, thanks for having me on, mate. It's a pleasure to come on here. And can I just say, I never, ever dreamt that my Stevenage would ever be playing Derby in League One. So I'm over the moon to come on here and talk about us and kind of give all of you kind of Derby fans a bit of an insight to us at Stevenage, because it's a bit surreal that we're in this division, to be honest with you, mate.
I think, Matt, not to be rude, it's a bit surreal that we're still in the division as well, because I think if you look at it a couple of years ago, it might be a tasty FA Cup tie, but we've got two tasty league fixtures to look forward to as well. And it's a different, and the way I look at it is it's a different team, it's a different experience, and all these different teams bring something different to the group. So it's great to be able to finally to mm-hmm. I'm not great to play Stevenage in the league, yes, but also not great because we don't necessarily want to be in League One for an extended period of time. No disrespects to you and Stevenage, but I'm looking forward to chatting with you all about them to learn a little bit more and what they'll bring to the ground. So, Matt, tell me about Stevenage so far this season. I'm just looking up the league table right now. Tell me about the season so far, because Stevenage, they're fifth. So something's got to be working. You're fifth in League One. It's now end of October. Tell me, Stevenage's season so far, how's it been going?
Yeah, wow. What a question. It's been going absolutely fantastic. I mean, to be honest with you, Corey, all of us Stevenage supporters in this new era are kind of still pinching ourselves that we're in League One. We're a little bit like, what are we doing here? So to be up the top of it is kind of even more surreal when we're a little bit like, geez, we're fifth. We've got 21 points from 13. Like, what are we doing here? Like, we just come into this league. And, you know, it's, yeah, look, it's been an incredible journey the last kind of few years we've had. But, yeah, look, this season, in a nutshell, coming to the division, our manager, Steve Evans, who took us over not even 2 years ago, got us promoted and got us into League One. We kind of came into this season and it was a case of whether we, do we keep the side that got us promoted in League Two, or do we kind of rebuild and keep the players good enough from that setup and kind of upgrade the team to a competitive League One level? And that's what we did. The manager's a winner in Steve Evans. He's been here and done it before with other clubs. And we signed a lot of players who have been playing up the top of League One over the last few years. So that's what we've done. We've got a very unique style. We're very direct. We like to press. We're a very fit group. And when the fixture list come out and we saw that we were probably playing a lot of the teams that were probably going to be near the bottom in the opening couple of months, I think we all thought, you know, we might have a really good start. Lo and behold, opening three games, we won all of those right at the top of the league. And we've consistently stayed up there. We've seen some excellent performances. We beat Leighton Orient away 3-0 and Cheltenham, who were bottom, 3-0. We've, you know, had a decent home form, got 2 wins, 3 draws and just 1 defeat at home. Hopefully we beat Port Vale tomorrow. That's 3 wins and 3 draws at home. So it's been really good. I think the one kind of big positive that we've taken so far from 13 games is whenever we've played a team down the bottom, for the kind of best part, we've won and we've got a result. So it's kind of showing that we're a step above kind of that bottom half of League One, which is great, because for us, we're just happy to get 50 points and stay up. I think the learning curve for us has been when we've played a top side, whether we've played an Oxford or a Bolton, although we were great that night when we lost to Blackpool last week. We've probably just played the wrong style of football against those kind of top sides to compete. But it's been a great start. We've scored 18 goals, cracking goal scoring in big goal Reedy, Jamie Reed up top. So it's been positive. We're doing really well. 21 points from 13 is fantastic. We nearly got half to stay up. It's been a fantastic start, and to be fifth is incredible. So, yeah, look, for us, we just want to tick along now. Keep our home form going. I think that's our bread and butter. And if we can do that, I think we'll have a top half finish hopefully come the end of the season, which would be unbelievable.
So my thought is going into the season, Matt, you would probably have been happy staying above that dotted line to stay in League One. With the great start now, what, 11, 12, 13 odd games into the season, have expectations shifted where you're now thinking instead of just staying above the relegation line, are you now thinking we need to be mid-table? And do you think having that, like you said, kind of an early season, bit of an easy schedule, it might come back later on as you kind of play some of the quote unquote bigger boys or tougher teams in this division. So are you trying to stay, manage expectation with kind of reality in a way?
Yeah, look, it's a really good question. Again, the goal coming in was 50 points, but seeing that we've got 21 and, you know, there's still another 100 points to play for, you're kind of going, well, if the team can just get half of that, that's a playoff play. So I do think the expectations have risen a little bit. I think people, especially our supporters at Stevenage Football Club, are kind of thinking, you know, we'd like to think we can get a top half finish. I think realistically, we're looking at it now with 21 points. I think 12th and above, we can definitely get. So I think looking at it from our point of view, I think a lot of our supporters are saying, yeah, look, we can get a top half finish here with the points that we've accumulated. Again, don't get me wrong. We've played a lot of the sides that are kind of lingering near the bottom. But with 21 points in the bag, I mean, the team could have a dull second half of the season and just pick up a merely kind of 40 points and we'd still be top 10. So when we look at it like that, really the expectations have certainly risen to what we can achieve. But again, I mean, just to be in this unbelievable league, I mean, we technically were relegated from the Football League a few years ago and got kept up. So just stay up in League One, in my opinion, is an incredible achievement from where we were. So still for me, it would be to get to 50 points and sustain as a League One club. But do I really believe in our team? Yeah, I really do. I really believe in the players we've got. We've proved it with our style and identity of play and, you know, the 6 wins we've got. But I certainly think we can finish in the top half. And with the manager we've got, who's a winner, knows this level, he's done it before at other clubs, I think there's more than enough there to get a top 12 finish, yeah.
And Steve Evans, in addition to being a very good manager at this level, is also a very colourful character, as I'm sure you're well aware. He's one of the most colourful characters in the Football League, I think it's polite to say.
Yeah, look, colourful's one way to put it, because he certainly gets redder and redder if the referees aren't on his side, that's for sure. But yeah, look, what a manager, Corey. I mean, honestly, right, we'd had a lot of dark days at our club the last 6 years. We've seen Steve and he's down the bottom in League Two and it's been tough. And, you know, COVID's come. We had a real tricky period over COVID. And then season a couple of years ago, we looked like we were going to get relegated. And Big Steve took us over, kept us up, did an incredible job. And then, lo and behold, last year he gets us promoted. And then he's doing all this, you know, great stuff with us in League One. So the guy is just incredible. He knows how to win football matches. He's a great character. He fits the club perfectly. It's not just the fact of how successful he's been, but Steve Evans and his characteristics suit our club, really. It's really funny how that goes. I mean, for God's sake, his name's half a Stevenage, isn't it? So, you know, it's got to work, isn't it? So, yeah, look, great manager. I think the big thing about Steve as well is, you know, he has a massive resource book of players that he likes to take with him to certain clubs. He's done that with us. Or, you know, he brings certain players that he's either managed or has tried to sign in the past. He knows what he wants to play. He knows how to be successful. And he's done that with us. He's an incredible bloke, incredible manager. We've had him on the pod a few times. And actually, for all the stick he gets, he seems like a really nice bloke. So, yeah, look, he's here till 2025. Hopefully he stays. And yeah, look, he's our man. We love him to death, Corey. We love the guy. So, yeah, Steve, what a manager. Yeah.
Well, Matt, I want to talk about a couple of the players now because we've talked about the personnel and whatnot. One player that stands out particularly to me because he was at Derby last season is Harvey White. I was kind of from the outside looking in, right, from the uninitiated, so to speak. Harvey White was at Derby, was very well thought of at Tottenham. I don't think it necessarily ever caught real fire with him at Derby. There was a couple of reasons why and whatever. But then all of a sudden, you know, he's still a highly rated prospect at Tottenham Hotspur, and you're thinking maybe he's on for a championship move or something like that. And then he rocks up at Stevenage, and you're thinking, Harvey White at Stevenage, that's kind of a coup. Talk to me about Harvey White so far, because he'll be one of the names that our fans will recognize most in the Stevenage team.
Yeah, it's a bit of a weird one with Harvey. I think it's kind of similar to yourselves. He's a very talented young footballer who, in my mind, was going to go on and play championship football or even Premier League in the future. And, excuse me, I'll be quite honest, he hasn't really hit it off with us just yet, if I'm completely honest. He hasn't played really any league football. I think the only two matches he's had is two Football League trophy games. We haven't really seen a lot of Harvey. I think Harvey's a very gifted player, lot of talent, but I think Steve and his own admission have said the sort of football that we play, he needs to adapt and he needs to do a lot of work on the training pitch to be able to play our style. So Harvey hasn't really played any football, if I'm completely honest. We haven't seen a lot of him. I think, he's only played two Football League trophy matches. And I think at the minute it's really tough for him because we've got a very competitive midfield. There's a lot of good players in there. So Harvey's going to really have to work hard to really break into our starting 11, if I'm completely honest. He could do it. He's got bundles of talent. But at the minute, he hasn't played a lot of football. Again, I think Steve has said, you know, he needs to be a bit bigger, needs to be a bit more physical. And I think when Harvey works on those things and he gets himself in the right sort of shape to be able to play our style, I think there's enough of a player there to do big things and do good things for us. But if I'm completely honest, at the minute hasn't played and probably hasn't suited our style just yet. But yeah, look, we're expecting big things from Harvey in the next few months. Hopefully he can get himself into good shape and get himself in the starting 11.
Matt, talk to me about the style of Stevenage. You mentioned it a couple of times there. When we turn the game on to watch it, whether we're in attendance at the Lemex Stadium or we're watching it on iFollow IT or Rams TV, listening to it on the radio, what is the Stevenage style these days?
Well, I'm going to be honest with you, Corey. These days under Steve, it's fast, it's direct, it's high press. We don't stop going. We'll always push for a winner in the last minute, whether we're drawing, losing or winning the game. That is pretty much us in a nutshell. If you go on and have a look at the percentage stats, we'll probably have some of the worst in the division. That's because we like to get the ball forward. We've got the big man up top. Once we get the ball forward, then we can create with the really good technical players like your Jake Forster-Kaskis and your Jordan Roberts. And we like to get balls in the box early and use the big men of Aaron Presley to hold up the ball and bring other players into the play. We've got good work players like Jamie Reid who work all day long. They run off the shoulder, like to get in behind and do the dirty work and earn the goals. That's us in a nutshell. We like to be a threat from set pieces. We've got great players in the air like Cole Piergianni who are a massive threat from corners and free kicks. And that is our style. It's a bit of a weird one with us, really, because I think it's something that we set up at the start of the season. I think our style against the mid-table and bottom-half teams will be great. I mean, we can really dominate games and dictate the way that we want to play. We like to squash teams in their own half and get them to play our style. But against the top sides, the sides that we've played a lot, not so much Portsmouth because we got a really good point that day, but Oxford and Blackpool, I think we've seen that actually we need to mix it up a bit and get the ball down and play some good football. And technically, we've got the players to do that, like your Jake Forster-Kaskis and your Louis Thompsons and Ben Thompsons and Jordan Roberts. Got some talented, you know, really gifted players in the middle. So although our style is great and it's effective, I think there's been a want and need recently to see some good football as well. But look, our style in a shell, yeah, direct, high press, in your face for 90 minutes. That's how we'll play. And certainly when we play you, certainly at home next week, that's how we'll probably, look to play.
Hey, everybody likes possession stats, Matt, but as long as the ball hits the back of the net and you score more goals than the team, it doesn't matter the style, as long as you get 3 points on the board. That's what I was always told. So I've got no problem with just unrelenting pressure and getting it direct and forward. It looks good on TV to pass it round, but as long as you get it in the back of the net, that's what matters at the end of the day. Matt, where are the strengths in the Stevenage team? Where can they really hurt Derby? Where does Paul Warren have to really pay attention to Stevenage when he sets Derby up? Because this is where Stevenage is going to hurt Derby the most.
Well, I think, as you said, certainly at home, we've got this really good knack of squashing teams and getting them to play our way. And what we're very good at is we get the ball forward early and we get up to our halfway line. And because we've got a lot of energy, we've got a lot of fit players, we're a very big, strong side, we kind of squash you in your own half. And if we get an opportunity to do that early in the game, you'll have a tough 90 minutes getting out your half and trying to create anything. So I think that is certainly something that is a massive strength of ours. Originally, I would normally say our defence after the last couple of weeks, before the last 2 weeks, our defence was I think we had the best defence in the division, a lot of clean sheets. But recently, since we've played some of the big sides, we've let in a few goals. So normally I would be coming to you and saying the likes of Cole Piergianni at the back and Nathan Thompson are a real focal point, but that's something that we need to improve on. But yeah, look, main strength in the final third, squashing you, being horrible, in your face, getting you to play the way that we want to play. I think if I had to pick another strength, I'd certainly pick corners and free kicks as well. The amount of times that a ball will go in the box from a corner or a free kick and we'll have one of our Cole Piergiannis on the end of it creating something, whether it's a header at goal, header back across goal, getting another player on the end of it. They're certainly the strengths that that you'll need to look out for next week. And again, certainly at home, bit of a smaller pitch to what probably you're used to playing on. So our style of squashing you and getting you to play the way that we want to play is something that you're certainly going to have to look out for next week.
Where are the weaknesses in this team, Matt? Where can Derby really get at Stevenage and really hurt them?
I think the one thing that we've seen recently from when we've played the better sides is sides that are very technically gifted, who can get the ball forward quickly and play in transition really quickly, seem to be the teams that we've had a little bit of trouble against recently. So when I look back to Blackpool last week, what did we struggle with? We struggled with the quick transition of Blackpool from their own half to our half. So the quick football through the lines, we struggled with that a little bit. And again, I think it goes back to us probably playing the wrong style. But if I had to pick something out, looking from at the games against Oxford and Bolton and Blackpool, that's probably a weakness of ours and something that you could probably look to exploit, getting the ball through quickly through the lines, playing good football, getting the ball quickly into our own half and kind of unsettling us. I think if our strength is to suffocate you in your own half and get you to play the way that we want to play, I think the recipe to that is moving the ball quickly and getting yourselves in our final third quicker, if you know what I mean. So I think that's something that that has been a weakness of ours the last few weeks. Hopefully, we've been able to work hard and improve at that. But yeah, I think if I had to pick a weakness out recently from the big sides that we've played, certainly the quick transition of football that other sides have been able to exploit when we're defending.
And Matt, tell me about a couple of the key men for Stevenage who really make this team tick, who, when we turn the game on or watch it or listen to it, who are the ones we should be keeping our eye on?
Yeah, most definitely. So a couple of players spring to mind already. Jordan Roberts, a player that has played under Steve Evans before. We got Jordan last season. We all knew he was going to go up the levels anyway, and he's done it with us in League One. Jordan stepped up to the level and has just been brilliant. Almost looks like a championship player almost. He's quality in and around the box. He's got this fantastic quality of taking the ball from one end of the pitch to the other end of the pitch in quick succession. And I think that's something that you need in League One. You have to have that quality of players who can take you from A to Z in a few seconds. Jordan does that really well. Physically, he's a really good player, Jordan. So he's able to hold the ball up. He's able to battle off defenders and hold the ball. He's very good in the air. Jordan Roberts has been one of our best players this season. Another player I'm going to have to throw in there, Jamie Reid. He's got a nickname, Reedy, BGR, Big Goal Reedy at our club. Wow, does that guy score big goals. He's our top goal scorer this season. I think he's second top goal scorer in League One. He scored 9 goals in the division this season, 8-9. Big player. And the thing about Jamie Reid is he's improved under Steve. Steve has improved him as a hard-working goal scorer up top. He'll work hard. He'll get off the shoulder. In front of a goal, he's great. He could probably even have more goals than he should have done this season, sorry. So they're probably two standouts. If I had to pick another, I'd always say Cole Piergianni from corners and free kicks. That guy is an absolute monster in the box. Number 5, the captain. Got to keep an eye on him. If I had to pick out 3 players, I'd certainly pick out those 3 as players that you're going to need to look out for next week.
Fair enough. And Matt, before we let you go, I want to talk about the Lamex Stadium, which is used to be called Rod Hall Way, but obviously called the Lamex now because of sponsorship reasons and something. The capacity is 7,200. When Derby fans roll up to the Lamex Stadium, whether they take the train or they take the A602, as I'm looking at it on the map here, what can we expect from the ground?
Yeah, look, we're not the biggest. I think from you guys playing at Pride Park, it'll be a bit of a different one for your Derby fans coming down. I know that we played you in a friendly a couple of years ago, so some would have seen it. But yeah, look, lovely, neat grounds, probably good enough for League One now. We've built a lovely new North Stand where I've got my season ticket in, which is opposite the away end. So the stadium looks like a real modern football league club now, which is something that we'd struggle with for the years. So yeah, I think when Derby fans come down, they'll get a little bit of a shock to the normal size of stadium that you're used to. But it's a lovely little stadium, park opposite for free, walk under the underpass and up and into the away. And the away is really good, holds 1,400, so you'll be able to get a good number in there. It's got good acoustics, so you can be heard really well in the stadium. But we're known to make a bit of atmosphere ourselves with this great team and doing so well in League One. So, yeah, the Lamex, cracking little stadium. And again, for the Derby fans, listen, if you want some food or want a drink, go into the Broadall suite in the corner of the stadium. That's where you can get your kind of pre-match food, pre-match drink before the game. So, yeah, that's what to expect of it. It's small, but you know what? It's a lovely stadium. It's my home. I love it. I do.
Matt, fair enough. I went to Cheltenham Town away just a few weeks ago. So those kind of smaller, more intimate grounds that have a bit of character and things like that are certainly interesting. Matt, I got to push you on this because we push all of our opposition supporters on this. How do you think this game's going to go here, right? Darby, you're ninth. Steven is your fifth. Yeah. Darby, you're kind of been a bit indifferent this season. Steven is, you're obviously flying. As an unabashed Stevenage supporter, and then as someone just as a football supporter in general, how are you viewing this game going to go? What's your score prediction? What are your thoughts?
Well, look, Corey, you're asking the most positive Stevenage Football Club fan ever. Anyone that knows me, Corey, knows, well, Matt's not going to go against his own team, right? Do you know what? If the game was away, I'd be sitting here going, this is a tough game for us. I think we'd all settle for a point away at Pride Park. With it being at home and knowing that if we beat Port Vale at home, some other home form's looking good, gives the team a bit of a boost going into this week of our matches. I'm quietly confident about it. I think it's going to be a tough game. And I think it's a really big game for our team to prove that when we do play the top teams, we can compete and get results. I think it's going to be close. I think it's going to be really tight. My head says it's going to be a 1-1 draw, but I'm going to go with my heart. I'm going to go with 1-0 Stevenage. I reckon big goal Reedy will come up trumps and nick us a goal with 20 to go. So, yeah, I'm going to stick with my heart on this one. I'm going to say 1-0 to our Stevenage, yeah.
Not only did you give a score prediction, you gave a minute in which the goal will be scored. That is very bold and brash, Matt. Very positive. I like it. Matt Farley from the Stevenage FC podcast. Matt, thanks for joining us today. And I would say best of luck for Saturday, but no, I don't want you to have best of luck. Best of luck after Saturday until we catch up at the return fixture. But Matt, thanks so much for taking the time.
Yeah, no, Corby, look, thanks for having me on. Absolute pleasure to come in here and good luck to all the Derby fans. Best of luck for the rest of the season. And yeah, we'll see you in the return fixture at Pride Park.
So, Chris, as we heard from Matt there, obviously we've got Stevenage at the weekend at the Lamex Stadium, which is next to, Chris, one of my favorite restaurants. Slightly, now I would say next to, kind of down the road from a Toby Carvery. I am a sucker for a Toby. I always get the roast beef. I don't know what you get at the Toby, but I always get a roast beef because I like that. Let's talk about Stevenage, Chris. As Matt said there, Stevenage are actually doing pretty well this season, punching well above their weight, 25 points roughly, in fifth position at the time of when I recorded with Matt. And he's pretty happy. Steve Evans is doing a great job. They thought they would hopefully get 50 points this season to stay up. They've already got like 25-ish at the time of recording. So they're doing pretty well. And I think that this would be kind of an exciting cup tie, really, in all honesty. I think that he admitted as much as that. And they're just buzzing that Derby County is going to be coming to the Lamex Stadium. Normally, again, Chris, to harken back to the first part of the conversation, we shouldn't really be in a position where we're scared of Stevenage, where we're scared of going to Stevenage. We should roll up, respect them, play our football, get back on the bus with 3 points and go home. This is not the world in which we live in at the moment. Does Stevenage scare you, Chris, with the start of the season that they've had?
I wouldn't say they scare me. I think I do agree it's probably one of the tougher assignments we've had this season, in fairness. So quite a different proposition to, so Bolton, Peterborough, Blackpool, that sort of opposition that we, you know, the three toughest away games we've had, you know, all those three teams are, you know, are obviously trying to pass through you and, you know, and play the kind of football in a certain way. I think this is going to be a bit more attritional. So this is the sort of game where I would suggest if we were top of the league, this would probably be a bit of a banana skin. So you are going to have to roll your sleeve. We're going to have to turn up. That is for certain. We definitely have to be well organised in defence. And we're certainly going to have to be defending set pieces properly. Yeah, I don't think it's going to be an easy one, but I think if we do those things, and defending really since the first two or three games has not really been the problem, has it? Let's be honest. So, yeah, there's no reason why we can't do damage to them, but I think that, you know, we are going to have to roll our sleeves up and make sure we're fully aware we're in a game But I think if we do those things and we do the kind of the basics, then they, you know, there's obviously no reason why we can't cause them some problems as well.
I'm going to ask you a question. I think I know the answer to it, but I also might not know the answer to it. So I'm going to ask you anyway. Are you looking more for a result or are you looking more for a performance, Chris, on Saturday?
For a result, 100%. Away from home, definitely. Yeah, I mean, away from home.
Doesn't matter, I think, as long as we come in with 3 points.
No, I think so. I mean, like Warne made the comment, didn't he, as well? I can remember from the Blackpool game when he said if that game was at Pride Park, we'd have been booed off at half time, you know, at 0-0. Because they had all the ball and we didn't, you know. And away games are different, I think. I think there's not the expectation for us to dominate and be on the front foot like there is in home games. And I think if you know, even your cup tie analogy, you know, if you're away to somebody at the conference in the cup, you're going to have to defend some corners and free kicks and they're probably going to come at you for the first 15 minutes of each half. And then you hope that the cream rises to the top and class shows out. But, you know, if you don't show up in those first 15 minutes, and you're 2-0 down, you've obviously got a problem. So, yeah, I think it is kind of, it is a bit cup tie-y, I think. But, yeah, Steve Evans' team, you know, he's horrible. His teams are horrible. And, yeah, as I say, I do know that, you know, they are set-piece monsters. And, you know, so we're going to have to definitely win some of those first balls. I think I can't remember the guy's name and I wish I'd done my own work now, but they have a guy who basically is the king of first contacts and he doesn't necessarily score, but he flicks them all on. I can't remember his name, but so it's a thing. And this guy's got multiple assists from set pieces though. He flicks them on. So there's definitely going to be some defending to do. So, we'll, you know, if we turn up though, you know, no reason.
So he'd be a flick-on specialist. Like, that's a special tag. We can, like, he's a flick-on specialist. We've got this. Like, that's his thing. How would you change the team up, Chris? How do you want to see, other than getting 3 points, do the personnel need to be shifted, or how would you adjust the team to get a result?
I think I would certainly put some more pace in there. So I think I think Washington's definitely earned a start. And as I said a few minutes ago, his movement probably helps. I think I always like to see Barkhuizen in there. Because I think, you know, he just adds something. So, you know, I don't know whether we'd sacrifice, Kane Wilson perhaps and Sibley, or, you know, maybe, yeah, Kane Wilson, Sibley, or maybe Waghorn. And have at least Barkhuizen and Washington in there, so we've got that you know, we can do the transitions. You know, maybe those three, and perhaps put Collins in there. I don't know, but and just go four at the back, maybe four. 4-2-3-1 or some sort of 4-3-3. I'm not really sure, but I think what I would be doing definitely is be looking to get a bit more pace than I saw last night, because that was the one thing we definitely were missing at the start, with Waghorn and Sibley as the top two.
Talk to me about Louis Sibley, Chris. But it'll be a while now. Still a young player, still growing, still developing. Been under four managers and has never really held down a consistent starting spot. And you get flashes like you did at Notts County where you go, wow, I got two goals. Maybe this is where he turns the corner. But I think it was Terry Venables that said, you know, he's about to turn the corner, but we just don't know where that corner is. He gets the start on Saturday. Again, hauled off. What Louis Sibley in this team, is it time to bid Sibs adieu? How do we get the best out of him consistently? Because he's got all the attributes to be a performer at this level, but he's not performing at this level.
No, I think, regretfully, I think he's running out of lives, isn't he? So, I mean, we've seen it so many times where he plays in a lesser game, bags a brace, comes on a sub, scores a worldie, gets us out of jail. I mean, I like him on the pitch because he shoots. And if he gets a chance, I am always confident he's going to, you know, have a, you know, dip his bread, for want of a better phrase. And, but I mean, the amount of times he's done one of those things and then you're like, come on, then let's start Sibley. He starts and he just doesn't take the chance. And, He wasn't in the game last night. I didn't think he played up badly on Saturday at Shrewsbury. I saw a few people saying he didn't turn up. I don't agree with that. I thought he was all right. And I think Max Bird likes him as well. So when you do notice Max Bird does try and pass to him and try and bounce off him, because obviously they came through together. He's definitely got something, but he is, unfortunately, I think, running out of lives.
Yeah, I would agree. I think, you know, when you have four managers, I think he's probably a little victim of his own success, really, with the, you know, Project Restart hat trick he had against Millwall, where, you know, people were making those comparisons to a certain Real Madrid player in midfield, who will go nameless, whose brother plays for Sunderland. But, you know, he's kind of a victim of his own success, because we know he has it in his locker, but again, it's that consistency, Chris, right? And I think you've had four different styles of managers that he's kind of worked under: Philip, Wayne, Liam, and now Paul. And he can't really seem to settle under any of them to get a consistent run in the team. And I agree with you, he plays and he does okay, but then you're sitting there and you're like, but I know that there's more. And then you don't see that. And then you're thinking, but I know that there's more. Where is it? Because I've seen it in fits and starts. You know, again, he played great against Notts County. And then it's like, and now kick on from that. And then it's just reverting back to the norm of.
Well, if you compare him, I mentioned Max Bird in the. And if you compare him to Max, so I think Max Bird's always been a good player. But if I look at him 2 years ago, he was always a good player, but he was weak. You know, he couldn't protect the ball. He got knocked about quite a bit. Doesn't get knocked about anymore, does he? You know, he has noticeably bulked up, worked on his strength, worked on that side of his game. And Sibley doesn't seem to have done that. You know, he kind of still, to me, you know, still got all the attributes. He's still more than capable of, but, you know, he might bang one in the top corner on Saturday. And if he came off the bench, I'd always fancy him to do that. And why didn't he come on at Cheltenham, by the way, while we're mentioning that? Doesn't seem to have changed in his physique at all. You know, he should have been like smashing the gym, eating as many protein bars and pies as he can. And he just hasn't done it, has he? Whereas whatever Max Bird was doing, you know, he's a big guy now, isn't he? And, you know, you don't see him getting knocked about, that is for sure. In fact, you see him knocking other people about.
Exactly. Let's talk about another midfielder, Chris, before we finish, because I want to get your opinion on this. It's Tyrese Forna. Brought in from Nottingham Forest. He had a loan spell at Reading, had a loan spell at Shrewsbury. And I showed up to Cheltenham, and I saw him play against Cheltenham. I saw him play against Notts County. And I was not impressed with Tyrese Forna. I think sometimes it seems like at times he was just kind of there and the world was kind of going around. Thoughts on Tyrese Forna in this midfield? Is it taking a while to adjust to a new team, getting used to a different style of play? You know, how do we get the best out of Tyrese?
Well, I think at Cheltenham, Paul Warren shafted him is the first answer. So we had that brilliant combo at Blackpool of Forna. Forna played a blinder at Blackpool, running around, super aggressive. He was everywhere. Corey Smith, not you, was brilliant. And
I can't remember the last time I ran, Chris, to be honest with you, mate.
Yeah,
I don't remember the last time I ran.
No, I said it because I thought you were thinking, Corey, pay attention, listen to me, come on. So you're looking at your iPad. And So I think that the Cheltenham game, neither of the midfield touched the ball because our centre backs, we were outnumbered 3-2, which resulted in their goal. And our centre backs didn't play through the lines at all. They just boomed it out to the wingers. It was horrendous. But I agree with you. I think it's early days for him. I'm not going to judge him. I think he's definitely got something. He's definitely athletic. He showed at Blackpool he can make a tackle. He's all right on the ball from what I've seen. He kind of carries the ball as well, which is quite a good attribute to have, like Max does. Well, we might need that when Max leaves in January. So I think it's early. I'm not going to judge him. I think he's got something, but you know, he's young as well. You know, don't forget, he's still young. You know, he's, you know, this is a, I know he's been on loan before, so he has got games, but this is his first permanent contract. So a bit of settling in to do. And yeah, I think he might be all right. I agree with you. The game has passed him by a couple of times when I've seen him, but I think you might find he'll be all right. I think he just needs a bit more time.
And I think that's an interesting point to make as well, Chris, and something to remember is maybe Tyrese Forna was not brought in for right now. Maybe he was brought in for mid to late January when certain other players start to depart, namely probably Max Bird, and I would also assume Aaron Cashin as well, as we cash in on both of them.
Yeah.
Yep. See? No?
No.
It's overplayed. I know.
Can't laugh.
I got to get a new guy, new jokes.
It's too sad. It's
I can't
too
play
sad
football.
To
I can't
about.
Do comedy. I can barely host a podcast. So it is what it is these days. But, you know, it's a good consideration to make, Chris, that, you know, maybe we don't judge Tyrese until January because, you know, maybe he's been brought in, you know, kind of like a young player, right? Yeah. Trying to feed him to try to get him up to speed. So he's playing his better football late in the season when we don't have the cover like we have Max Bird right now. So it'll be interesting to see how he develops and everything like that. So, Chris, I appreciate you taking the time. I know you've had a long day at work. And the last thing you want to do is spend more time than necessary with me on the podcast. So I'm going to let you get your wellies back on and your arm floaties so you can float down the street. But Chris Smith, thanks for joining me on the podcast this week. Really appreciate it. It's good to see you, mate. And I'm glad that we're able to do this.
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed it, Corey. No, thanks ever so much for inviting me on, as always.
That's it for this week, guys. We'll be back next week. With another podcast, hopefully. Again, apologies for the service interruption, but services regularly resuming schedule now. A bit of life hit both of us at the same time, so we were not able to convene and bring you the Derby County coverage that we want to. So appreciate all your support. And the one last thing to say is up the Rams.
Thank you for listening to the latest episode of the Rams Review podcast. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to get in touch, we're on Twitter at RamsReview1. Our Facebook is Rams Review Podcast. Or you can drop us an email, ramsreview@hotmail.com. Thanks for listening, and until next time, up the Rams.